You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. In your backyard. And worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband, let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Keenan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePray and you get a whole service.
How does it go?
IE7, you're having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
Well, it's not hard at all.
The photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Greetings, everybody, and welcome to the show for this week. I'm your host, Andrew McCollum. Well, it's finally happened. Something we all thought would be a long time coming. And in a way, it has been. No fanfare, no advertising campaign, no extravagant launch. Last week, Australia's incumbent telco, Telstra, turned on ADSL2 in over 900 exchanges across the country. Until now, Sol has only allowed Telstra to sell the ADSL2 product in exchanges that its competitors have had the same technology. So why the change of heart? The announcement was made in Canberra last Wednesday by Telstra boss Sol Trujillo with Kevin Rudd and Stephen Conroy. According to the press release, ADSL2 is now going to be turned on in 900 exchanges because the government gave Telstra an assurance that it would not regulate third-party access to the service. Telstra has been seeking this assurance for over a year. Now, some history is required here. The ACCC has stated time and time again that ADSL2 services are unregulated and should stay that way. Also, the ACCC has legislative powers to regulate this service if it desires, and the federal government can give no guarantee that it will not be regulated. So what's going on here then? Why, all of a sudden, has Telstra turned on ADSL2 Plus when it's dug its heels in for so long? It just doesn't add up. Are Rudd and Conroy doing backroom deals? Don't get me wrong, it is great news for all Australians, but the cynics are asking, what's the catch?
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
YouTube is going to profit split advertising revenue with top content generators. Rural New South Wales Vodafone users stuck without mobile services for almost a week. Mobiles and cancer are back in the news again. More on the Microsoft $44 billion offer for Yahoo. And the price of the Xbox 360 heads south in a big way. First up, what's been happening in the world of technology this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
Tonight on Tech Talk News, Telstra turns on ADSL2 Plus in 900 exchanges across the country. Ousted Senator Helen Coonan weighs in on the Telstra ADSL2 Plus debate. Ex-Woolies IT execs on fraud charges. And Google selling more email security. This is Tech Talk News. First up, though, British chip designer ARM will show a prototype mobile phone based on Google's Android platform next Monday at the Mobile World Congress wireless show in Barcelona. Deutsche Telekom's T-Mobile and Taiwan's Hi-Tech Computer have said that they plan to offer phones based on the open-source Android software platform this year. Internet search leader Google may upset the wireless industry with its software system design to make the web as smoothly accessible from mobile devices as from PCs, challenging Nokia, Microsoft and Apple. It is also bidding for wireless spectrum in the United States in a move that pits it against the entrenched carriers like AT&T and Verizon Wireless. Its operator partners in the Open Handset Alliance announced in November include China Mobile, NTT Docomo, KDDI and Telefonica, which have all said they are working with handset makers to develop Google-based phones. Research firm Strategy Analytics has estimated that Android will be in 2% of smartphones this year. Telstra has given its ADSL services in 900 telephone exchanges a speed boost long sought by its wholesale internet customers. The carrier said it would progressively switch on ADSL 2 Plus across the exchanges over the next 7 months, making the service available to around 2.4 million consumers via its network for the first time. The move will boost maximum theoretical broadband speeds available from the exchanges from 8 megabits per second to 20 megabits per second. However, until now, the carrier has only been willing to make ADSL 2 Plus available from exchanges where it was being offered by its competitors, including iiNet, Primus and Internode. Telstra has resisted pressure to turn on the technology, citing concerns that Australia's competition regulator would attempt to set wholesale pricing for the service. Telstra said that the government had made it clear it did not consider a compelling case had been made for the regulatory third-party access to the service. Telstra's Jeff Booth.
Well, now homes and small businesses in regional Australia will be able to access the internet at very high speeds, and there's going to be great benefits for our small businesses in regional Australia and great benefits for not only education and health applications but also entertainment for people at home.
David Foreman, chairman of the Competition Carriers Coalition, said Telstra was attempting to undermine support for arguments the carrier's network operations should be split from its retail businesses. The CCC said that the federal government had merely repeated advice the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission has already given to Telstra during the last 18 to 24 months. And former Communications Minister Helen Coonan's bitter war of words with Telstra is raging on, even though she's no longer in government. Senator Coonan, who as a minister had a toxic relationship with Telstra, attacked the telco in a letter to a newspaper, despite having lost responsibility for the communications portfolio when the coalition was forced into opposition. Senator Coonan accused Telstra of backflipping with its announcement last week it would activate high-speed ADSL 2 Plus broadband at more than 900 exchanges. She told the Financial Review that the pity is that these Telstra exchanges could have been activated more than 18 months ago. Senator Coonan also said she offered Telstra a letter of comfort, telling it faced no regulatory risk. But Telstra, she claimed, refused to activate the broadband services unless it was given an unfettered right to build a fibre-to-the-node network. A former senior technology executive of Woolworths has been charged with 9 counts of fraud after allegedly swindling almost $4 million from the retailing giant over several years. The Nine Network reported last week that police alleged that while he was handling a $130 million scanning systems project involving an American and an Israeli company, fraudulent activities were in play. The 57-year-old allegedly took more than $3.7 million worth of kickbacks after awarding contracts worth $37 million. The executive, who worked at Woolworths for 9 years until he left in 1999, was arrested last Thursday at his home in Castle Hill, in Sydney's northwest, following an 8-year police investigation. A Woolworths spokeswoman defended the company's internal anti-fraud practices and said the police investigation, which was carried out at the request of the company, had been thorough. The accused had regularly travelled overseas in his role representing one or a combination of Woolworths-operated businesses including Big W, Dick Smith Electronics, Dan Murphy's and BWS. The man was granted bail and will appear in a Parramatta local court on March the 6th. And finally this week, global marketing research company IDC has sounded a wake-up call to Australian telcos, warning Google is adding more email security and storage products for its businesses, sharpening its aim on a Microsoft stronghold, while the competition between the two rivals also heats up in internet search and advertising. The tools introduced last week build upon technology that Google acquired last year when it bought email specialist Postini for $625 million. The package of products are designed to weed out junk mail and potential viruses, as well as protect against leaks for confidential information sent through email. Google is also offering to retain email data for longer periods. All the latest features are compatible with Microsoft Exchange, as well as Lotus Notes and Novell GroupWise. Prices will range from US$3 per user to $25 a user, depending on how much protection and data retention a customer wants. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Macworld 2008, there's a big patch, 10.5.1, that came out that fixed a lot of bugs.
Yeah. If you've got the wrong SIM card, if you've got the wrong thing, it's because they sold you the wrong thing.
You can't train people to sell the right thing if the right thing isn't available.
Yeah, they don't want scum like me in this show.
I think this discussion needs to be held off air.
Conroy said that they've got to give free upgrades to people who don't have the right phone.
Look, it's good in theory, but in practice, well, I don't think they're hearing that out there in the bush.
Well, I don't understand it, but I believe it.
I don't understand it. You can see it. Yeah.
There's a lovely photo of Sol on his knees with a liney out in the field.
The thing defies logic in respect to its physical size.
Yeah, we won't go there, but yes.
Right. You've got the world's most aggressive spam filter.
I know, and it works really well.
You send an email, and an email comes back that says, who the hell are you and what do you want? This is why you don't outsource essential infrastructure.
Absolutely.
Now, I think what's going on there...
You've got a Faraday shield in your kitchen, have you?
I don't know, but I'm not happy.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Very good evening, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Sitting across from me today on the panel, Graham Callaghan, and our very special, much nicer looking Dr. Ron. Justin Dunlop joins us again to say, tell us all about Max and everything else. He's going to be a panelist for the next little bit. So, Justin, g'day, how are you? Thanks for coming in and filling the very big shoes of Dr.
Ron. Huge shoes. Thanks, Andrew. Hi, Graham. Lots of news on the Apple front, actually, so
is
that it'll be good.
We can talk about that. Dr. Graham? How's life? What's happening? Anything exciting? You'd be busy because Vista's doing all sorts of things at the moment, too. So
yeah, there's...
From both camps, Microsoft and...
I'm actually anxiously awaiting my my update disc to get the Vista Service Pack 1 and see how it goes. The talk around the shop, though, is not entirely encouraging, I'd have to say.
What do you mean?
A lot of people are saying that Service Pack 1 for Vista, which has just come out, is not doing wonders for Vista's speed, which is what Microsoft said it should do, but... Yeah, apparently it's still a bit slow and not getting any better.
Do you know many customers, or do you have many customers, or do you know many people using Vista?
Not a great deal. We have a very small number, notably because they've bought it on laptops that they've bought from retail outlets and they haven't quite...
I'm in that boat. Well, put it this way, my wife uses Vista, and she uses two programs, a mail client and a word processor. So apart from that, it works fine.
Yeah, well, on a simple system, and on a system that's got a halfway decent processor and a ton of RAM, it'll run okay.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to run on a system that's got less than a gig of RAM.
Yeah.
And it only really works well on the latest sort of dual-core type processors.
Ah, yes. Very good. Yeah, well, no, this is on a little Acer. Once again, bought by a laptop from the local computer shoppy type down thing down the road. And for all intents and purposes, it does actually run exceptionally well. So, yes, I think persistence is everything with Vista, because a lot of people do are very sluggish. Or even still, all my work machines still run on XP.
Yeah, Vista still feels a bit strange to those of us who've got very used to the way XP comes together.
And the thing that goes in the back of my mind is that Mac ad. Have you seen the Mac ad?
Yes, with the security guard, yes.
Yeah.
We're coming to a sad realisation.
Anyway, speaking of Macs, apart from the fact that Adam Turner actually uses one and is a little disappointed the Shoutcast stream isn't there for technical reasons this evening. So hello to everyone listening to us on the Windows Media Stream, including Mike in Western Australia. G'day, Mike. Got an email from him before. It must be about a few hours difference between us and them at the moment. I'm just trying to scroll back down and find his email here, but he was referring to Dr. Ron. Scroll down. Oh, this is very professional. Hey, fellas, just letting you know, you at least have one listener in Western Australia listening on the stream. Already online. That's very keen, Mike. And
that was before we'd even started the show.
That was about 45 minutes ago.
There you go.
I don't know what you've been listening to, but it's probably great. So, g'day, Mike. And he's been listening to Dr. Ron on ABC Radio, as you do. Yes, he sort of serenades us all on telling us all about grammar and the likes. And, Mike was just letting us know that he had a listen there. So,
okay.
Dr. Ron is absent tonight, of course. I asked you last week to send the email. Graham, didn't you send him an email?
No.
We have changed studios. Do you think he's not?
He's probably showing up at the old studio, is he?
Anything's possible. Another interesting bit of feedback from last week. We were talking about the new AirBook, or the Air thing from Mac. And Adam sent across a follow-up email the other day saying, yes, it is true, the battery life does suck. And I have had another bit of feedback too. We spoke last week that the battery is an iPhone battery. That is, it's soldered in. I heard contrary to that in the weeks preceding, I don't know whether you know, Justin, about the batteries in the new the new ultra really thin.
My understanding is that they can't be user replaced, but you can get them replaced at a service centre. So if you're a professional and you need to swap batteries in and out to go for hours and hours and hours on a plane, that isn't going to happen for you.
We can't use them on a plane anyway because you haven't got a DVD in there or no optical drive, so you can't watch your movies.
Yes, you can.
Well, not unless you copy them on or hijacks the PC in front of you. Excuse me, buddy, can you just run this bit of software in the seat in front of you?
That's right.
I want your hard drive. I want your optical drive.
But you're limited to the battery that's in there, and you can get it replaced when it dies.
Good, because in real-world tests, on the Mac site, they're claiming 5 and a bit hours or 5.5 hours or something like that, and real-world tests, as everyone's starting to put up on the web, is around about 2 hours, which... Because batteries, and they have to be chunky. They have to be big for capacity, and I think you're kidding yourself if you don't think it's that way. We have a newsletter, the Tech Talk Radio newsletter, and thank you to all the new people who have signed up for it. Visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. On the right-hand side, about halfway down, you'll see it. Just click through there and sign up, and we'll send you. We'll spam you. No, we won't. We'll just send you an email and tell you what's on the show tonight. And there's lots on the show tonight, as we've alluded to in the opening. So I guess we should get onwards and upwards. But first, JD Macworld, what happened? Was it good? It was a bit of an anticlimax compared to the previous year, wasn't it?
Well, just as an observer over here in Australia, it was interesting to notice that the new Mac Pro with 8 cores was released before Macworld. And you sort of think, well, if there
are 8 cores?
Well, 2 quad cores, but yeah,
8 cores. Okay, that's why they're 8 cores, yeah, okay, 2x4, yep.
So you think, well, they're releasing that before Macworld, what on earth are they going to do at Macworld? And the MacBook Air was probably the world's worst-kept secret. No one really saw it, but they all knew what it was likely to be, came out. Interestingly, they released some software upgrades for the iPod Touch. So a lot of people had hacked their iPod Touches so that they could do mail and various other things. That's now a $20 upgrade. That you can download. Well, I suppose, you know, pay $20 instead of hacking your thing and losing your warranty might be not such a bad thing. But they didn't bother to actually announce the 32-gigabyte version until after Macworld. So, again, they obviously thought they were going to do big business with the MacBook Air.
I was reading in the mainstream media today that there's been some price drops, too, on some of the, I think, iPod things.
Yeah, iPod, I don't have one. Well, so the new Touch came in and obviously it went up. It's the most expensive iPod they've got at the moment.
It's up. That would be Apple.
Yeah. The Apple TV got a bit of an overhaul. There's a firmware update that apparently is going to be free, and that allows you to download video rentals directly rather than needing a computer to download it.
Yeah, except if you're in Australia or any country which hasn't done a deal with the movie houses or the record labels. It's a bit like why iTunes never took off that quickly in Australia, because no one had done the record company deals, so that's stage. It was only US.
That's right. They've got HD over there. We've barely got SD over here.
They still forced us to upgrade iTunes so that you can download and hire movies, but there's just none you can hire. So why we had to install the upgrade, I don't know.
Because you have to, I think. Yeah.
Actually,
global compatibility.
Along that lines, I also had firmware upgrade in my iPod, and I had 2 in the space of a couple of weeks. My iPod Classic went to version 1.1, and then a couple of weeks later it went to version 1.1.1.
Does that mean because they didn't quite get it right the first time?
That's exactly what it means. Yeah, because it had a bug.
Why didn't they test it properly?
I don't know, but just once in a while when you switch your iPod off on version 1.1, you'd switch it off and you'd get all this noise and static and horrible sounds come out of your headphone socket.
Good.
Not good at all when you switch it off, and of course that drains your battery as well while it's sitting there idle. So 1.1.1 came out and fixed that, but there's still a couple of other issues.
So you're using an iPod Classic? I've just imported a version 1 from 2000.
Oh wow, the exact opposite end of the scale.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The other product that was released was Time Capsule, which is essentially an Airport Extreme base station with a hard drive built in.
Hang on, say that again. Yeah. An Airport Extreme base station.
So an 802.11n.
Yeah, okay, n. This would have to be for the air thing, because nothing else was in, was it, in the Mac range? Is that right?
Oh, no, they had the routers already.
Oh, did they? Yeah. Okay.
They had the Airport Extreme router that was N capable, and they had an application called AirDisk, supposedly, where you could plug your hard drive into this thing, and it would turn into a network-accessible drive.
Mm-hmm.
So basically you connect to the network, and then you've got this extra hard drive. But a lot of people were complaining that it didn't work all that well. And interestingly, it's just a feature that's cut out completely now in the latest version of the Mac operating system. And they've introduced Time Capsule, which is this new product. It's actually the same thing, but it's a new product with the hard drive built in this time. Oh. So you can get it with a 500 gig or a 1 terabyte hard drive built in. I love the way they beta tested on customers. That's a good concept, really, isn't it? You used 802.11n, just for those of you wondering, what on earth are they talking about? That's the new U-Butte Superlux, even faster wireless connectivity. Up until now, what are they, Graham? 802.11g?
Well, 802.11g is 54 megabits per second.
Yep.
And 802.11n is 108 megabits per second, I think.
Okay. So there you go.
Just for comparison, the blue cables you see strung around most places, they're 100 megabits per second. So it means that wireless is now, they're the same. And so wireless is now comparable with the Cat 5, Cat 6 cable.
Yep.
Although Cat 6 now, you do gigabit over 1,000 megabits per second.
Yeah, it's a good tip there for Cat 6 too. If you've ever looked on the end of one of those little cables, and I guess most people have seen them these days, are those blue cables. The way you can tell Cat 5 from Cat 6 is the fact that Cat 5 has all the cables straight on the plug. If you hold it to your face and look straight down there, you'll see the eight little cables and they're all straight. Cat 6 is a bit like a sawtooth. It's all down, up and down, up and down.
It's also written on the cable.
That helps.
Yeah.
Yeah. But a lot of people don't. If you see some of the cables that are running around the place, so you can't read much on them because they're all cable tied or crimped or whatever together.
Yeah, this is true.
So there's a bit of a telltale sign. Mm. And of course, like everything in computers, it's a bit like getting stuck behind the VW on the superhighway. If you're on a single lane superhighway and you get stuck, there's nothing you can do.
Yes, the slowest link in the chain is going to be where your problem's going to be.
Oh, indeed. Hey, here's something funny too. I did a bit of an upgrade on one of my relatives' computers over the course of the weekend.
Yes.
Came round and said my Outlook is just really giving me grief, and this is one I actually, the machine I had to rebuild recently. I won't go into the details as to why, but we decided to brazenly go into the future, and I loaded up Office 2007. Just an upgrade?
Yes.
Why do you go like that? It wasn't too bad.
It's a big step.
I must admit, I've been using Office 2007 at work for the last probably 4 or 5 months since it's been out. And it's been pretty good. It's got a few little bugs, a few little issues. You just close it off and then launch up again and away she goes. But apart from that, the funny thing about it was she went to send an email and used the spell check and it was all in French.
Oh, my goodness.
But everything else was fine. You load up Word and use the spell check. It's English.
Excellent.
Same with Excel. But as soon as you open up Microsoft Outlook, it's in French. And it wasn't the beta version or the pre-release version. It's a candidate version. It was a real version. So I have to have a bit of a look-see and find out what was going on there. Very funny,
Hit
really.
Get the old knowledge base on the Microsoft website.
Time is everything. All right. On to big news this week. ADSL 2. Telstra has decided that it's going to open up all of its high-speed exchanges in the next few months.
Yeah, about bloody time, too.
Well, yes, you might say that. And the reason,
I didn't say that.
The reason why is still beyond... I don't know why.
No.
If anyone can tell us why, cynics are us. That's us probably, too. I can't speak for Justin here, but cynical is where we come from.
Mm.
Why they didn't do this earlier, I don't know.
There must have been some technical reason, surely, Andrew.
All the equipment's been in the exchanges for months and months and months and months.
I think it was an HC technical barrier that they had to get across.
Yes. Yes, so we didn't have much much love for the for the communications minister of the day.
Yes, good old Helen. But anyway, and she's in the news again today too for I don't know whether it's right or wrong reason.
Well, she put her head up to put in her two bob worth about the issue and probably got told to put it back down again, I think.
Did she?
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about that in a sec. But basically what this means is that in 900 exchanges around the countryside, they're going to turn on ADSL 2+. Now, you've got to remember that you've got to live relatively close to a telephone exchange to enjoy the speeds that ADSL 2 delivers.
And in fact, if you look at the way the speed, the connection speed versus the distance from the exchange works, unless you're really close to the exchange, you really won't get a speed that's much different from ADSL 1 anyway. Because as you get further from the exchange, the speeds tend to merge together, to get closer together. So you only get any advantage if you're within a kilometre and a half or so of the exchange.
Yeah, and up to 1.5, they'll give you good speeds, but beyond that. So what we're saying is it's not really for our country counterparts, because
although they're promoting it that way, they're saying that most of the 900 exchanges are in regional areas, rah, 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 but most of those subscribers aren't close enough to the exchange to get any real difference between ADSL and ADSL 2+.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au if you want to set your 2 cents worth if you're listening to us live on air or on the stream. The thing which I guess is amazing is that why all of a sudden we've had a change of government,
Sol and Bull Terrier, Phil Burgess, he's been as quiet as a mouse. I've never known him to be so quiet in the last few weeks. Maybe he's on an extended leave or something and they haven't told us. But nonetheless, we've got these two guys doing, I'm potentially guessing, backroom deals here in Canberra, because there was a bit of a powwow last Wednesday with Conroy, Rudd and Sol.
Yep.
And there was no fanfare, no rah or anything like that, you know. And we know Telstra likes a bit of a sprinkler addition on their launches and things like that to say they're going to do things. But in this case, nothing. Not even a press release. I did find it on their website, their media releases site, but I had to go and find it. Normally it comes out in an email. No, I didn't even see it this time. But I guess there is...
Although, to be fair, sending emails to you is not always that easy.
No, I get the Telstra ones because they got their own special address.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yes, thanks, Adam. And the... now you've made me look.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, they... There's pending announcements coming up about fibre to the node and fibre to the house, potentially. Conroy raised that one. I don't know whether that was a Freudian slip and he said fibre to the house, because that's a technology I really think Australia is, I don't know, it's a big ask, fairly expensive. Only Korea, I think, use at the moment. They've got 50 megabits per second or something, maybe even faster, fibre to the house. So they're one of the lucky countries. But then they've got such a dense population, they can probably afford it. Here, we're not quite so lucky. But fibre to the node, which is like a pole in the street or a box or a pit or something like that in your street, then they run a copper cable.
Yeah, so you don't have to be... There's the node is closer to you than the exchange is, so you don't have to be 1.5 kilometres from the exchange. You only have to be 1.5 kilometres from the nearest sort of concentration point where all the cables come together.
Exactly. So there's announcements in this sort of field at the moment too, so I'm just smelling a rat. It is the Chinese year of the rat,
The stated reason was that that Conroy gave them an undertaking that they weren't going to be regulated. In other words, that they weren't going to be forced
but Conroy
to resell
can't
it.
Give that regu-
That's exactly
that,
right.
Guarantee.
That's the ACCC's area.
And this is the thing, and I sent this out in the email this morning. You should subscribe, Graham. It's interesting reading.
I will.
The ACCC is an entity by itself. It's beyond the government control, not unless the government chooses to legislate. But I don't think they can legislate in competition and allowing others to have access to someone else's commercial interests.
Well, they would have to change the legislation that the ACCC operates under.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So nothing's changed. Everyone in the mainstream media has been saying, but this is what they've been saying for the last 18 months. And this is what Senator Coonan came out and said.
Yes.
They could have turned it on up to 18 months ago. But why? The multi-million dollar question.
I suspect we will find out if we watch and wait.
Jeff Booth is a man from Telstra.
Oh, yes.
He had a few things to say. I'm going to play it to you right now. I might also add that these grabs came from the Telstra website.
Well, now homes and small businesses in regional Australia will be able to access the internet at very high speeds, and there's going to be great benefits for our small businesses in regional Australia and great benefits for not only education and health applications but also entertainment for people at home. We're upgrading more than 900 exchanges with high-speed broadband, and the great news for regional Australians is that 80% of these exchange upgrades are happening outside of the major cities. It means that regional and rural people now have equivalent to what is available in the major cities. So whether it's remote education, for entertainment, now people can use multiple devices to access the broadband and not get a slower service.
Yeah, Jeff. 1.5 kilometres for regional people from the exchange, and then they get what we get in the city. A bit misleading there, I feel.
And at the same time, they're turning off the ISDN network as well for satellite feeds.
Are they?
Mm.
You're a wealth of information, Justin. Where'd you find out about that?
Well, I was actually researching the subject, so I decided to have a bit of a read. So they're turning off the ISDN domestic network.
What is ISDN, for those who don't know?
It's a digital phone system, so like your analog phones. This is the digital equivalent. Graham and I have played with that in the past.
Yeah, a long while back. It's kind of an old-fashioned digital network these days. It's a European system, isn't it?
Is it sort of redundant now?
Well, for the regional Victorian people, as I understand it, if they're using satellite, they tend to use satellite in one direction and they use ISDN in the other to get rid of the latency issues. And they're actually turning off the ISDN component. So the Telstra offer was, well, you can have NextG, which is a fat lot of use if you're actually having to use satellite, or you can have satellite both way, which introduces a huge latency, which actually means you actually can't communicate effectively. So,
because satellite's one way only, isn't it? It's down.
Well, there's two different. You can get one way satellite where your traffic coming towards you comes from the satellite, and your traffic that going away from you that you're sending out, like your request for a web page or what you've clicked on or whatever, goes out over a phone line or over an ISDN line, which is what Justin was saying, or over an ADSL link or even over a wireless link like an XG link. But to get the speed of downloads, you get that through the satellite. But there is two-way satellite where it uplinks as well, but that means much more expensive equipment, much more delicate in its setup, because you've got to actually have a transmitter that transmits back up to the satellite, and it's quite an expensive deal. It also means that the round trip time between when you click on something and when you start to get your reply is doubled, because instead of it going through the terrestrial network, which is a lot faster because it's a much shorter distance, it's got to go all the way up to the satellite and all the way down again, and then the reply's got to go all the way up to the satellite and all the way down again, and that takes a long time.
Let's hope this OPEL consortium can do something decent for the people that are a little bit rurally 1.5 kilometres beyond the exchange, because it would be... I know, I think we all need the internet these days. It'd be a very important tool, I think, in a lot of people's, especially the farmers, for weather.
Well, that's right. You've got to bear in mind that people
and stuff.
Yeah, people out there trying that they're not just feeding cows. They're trying to run a business, a 21st century business, and things like being able to get the test results. I mean, the customers that I work with with my work, we work with some farmers that produce milk, and it's absolutely critical to their business to get the test results off for the protein content in the milk, because that's what they get paid on, and those test results come back over the internet. So
I'm learning lots tonight.
That sort of stuff, you wouldn't realise that's how critical that can be to somebody trying to run a business.
Yeah, all right. Now, Conroy was on doing the media circuit across the course of the weekend. He had a few interesting things to say. I guess one of them was the fact that he was reinforcing what everyone else has been saying all along, and that is that the federal government has no power to regulate. It's really up to the ACCC. And what he says, because he sent Sol an email or a letter sort of reiterating the deal, like, you know, he's not going to regulate, he just said that. It was just a letter. He said, we can't do that anyway, but all of a sudden they've decided to do it. Here's what Mr. Conroy had to say.
Under law, I have no role. Any decision that I would purportedly make would actually hold no standing in law. This is a matter for the ACCC, as I explained in my letter and in all my public statements. I've made it very clear that this is properly the matter for the ACCC, but on the basis of the public statements and the conversations that I had with the ACCC, I was happy to write to Telstra, and if that gave them the comfort to be able to switch on 900 exchanges that reached 2.4 million households, then this was a win-win. And if the relationship between Telstra and the previous government wasn't as good as it could be, well, Telstra have drawn a line in the sand, and they want to move forward on a positive agenda about delivering genuine high-speed broadband to Australians.
Yes, yes, drawn a line in the sand. Well, at least it's positive. And as I said in the opening, it's really, really good for all Australians. Now, we've just got to talk about speed for a little bit. You know, ADSL2 is, 20 megabits per second if you're very, very close to the exchange, like maybe 800 metres or something, the office used to be.
What they technically say is up to 24 megabits per second. But, yes, obviously you only get that if you're right next door to the exchange, you might get 22 or 20, yeah?
Yeah, so, and you've got to mention that the government's benchmark is at least 12 megabits per second, if not, I think 20 megabits is the rate that they're actually talking about. And once again, Mr. Conroy was quite interested in telling us all about the speeds and just what he had in plan.
We're talking about delivering a minimum of 12 megs. What ADSL 2 Plus delivers is an up to speed, up to 20. The average is considerably lower, and the average is affected by the distance from the exchange. ADSL 2 Plus is a component of Labor's fibre network, but it isn't sufficient to reach 98% of Australians homes and businesses with a minimum. And that's the key here really is the word minimum. When you talk about ADSL 2 Plus, great technology if you live within 1.5 kilometres of an exchange. And that's the key difference with fibre. What we do with fibre is we take fibre into the streets. So the point at which you have to start using the copper is vastly reduced. So those properties of the laws of physics apply much closer to people's homes than they do from exchanges. And that's why it's important and critical, in fact, to get a fibre network in the ground here in Australia. There's a number of consortiums talking to us about fibre to the home, and I've been engaged in a number of discussions. Our specs that we'll be releasing in the next couple of weeks will allow the possibility of a consortium to put forward. Now, whether they can build the business case, that's a matter for the consortium. What we have said is that we won't contribute more than $4.7 billion, whether it's a fibre to the node or fibre to the home proposal.
Them's bait. I'm wondering if that was also in the letter that went to Sol. So there you have it. There's some interesting information there, but I must admit there was words came out of the Senator's mouth that I've never heard come out of Senator Helen Coonan's mouth, and that was about science.
Yes.
Physics, exactly, too right. But anyway, speaking of the lovely Helen Coonan, she came out during the course of the week, and this is what you were alluding to before, Graeme. Former Communications Minister Helen Coonan, a bitter war of words with Telstra is raging on, even though she's no longer in government. She came out apparently in the Financial Review, I think it was, said a few words, but apparently she's got a bit of a toxic relationship with Telstra, according to this article which came out of Australian IT, attacking the telco in a letter to a newspaper, Australian Financial Review, despite having lost responsibility for the communications portfolio when the coalition was forced into opposition. Senator Coonan accused Telstra of backflipping with its announcement this week, or last week, that it would constitute the ADSL 2. So I think... I don't know. Is it bitter words, do you think, boys? Or is it just moving on time?
Maybe moving on, bit of face-saving. IT did a good job and no one noticed. And
well, I think the electorate noticed, didn't they? Oh, dear. Anyway, that's the Honourable Senator Helen Coonan still out there and having a bit of a wow about ADSL2 and the likes. All right, moving along while we're talking about internet. Internode challenges Telstra with naked DSL. You know any customers with naked DSL yet, Dr. Graham?
Not yet.
No.
Naked
DSL is a lovely facility which you can now get, which hopefully means that Telstra doesn't get to double dip in your line rental.
Yeah, basically you have your ADSL provided on a phone line, but you don't have a phone service provided on that same phone line.
And hopefully you don't pay the line rental for it, because the old...
Yeah, you pay your ADSL fee, but you don't pay a phone service fee as well.
That's right. Internode was unable to confirm or set a date for the release of its naked DSL offering, but confirmed that its full production is not far away. Internode being one of the more reputable ISPs, South Australian-based organisation, they do a wonderful job. In fact, we used to be a customer of theirs, the Tech Talk Radio guys, us here, and they were faultless. Couldn't fault them in one iota if that's a bit of a bouquet. Naked DSL worth considering, but the downside is you don't get a fixed line with it anymore. So if you rely on a fixed line and your internet goes down, you can't make telephone calls, which may be good, maybe bad.
Yeah, but most people now have a mobile phone that's got a cap on it. So people tend to use their mobiles a lot more than they used to, even if they are at home, just for the convenience, because it's in your pocket.
Did you know that there's now more mobiles than landlines? We can talk about that later on the show,
that
too.
That doesn't surprise me in the least.
Oh, yes.
Well, I've got two in my pockets.
I've got two here too, yeah.
You boys. I've only got one. Telstra rivals are going to the ACCC now. Updating Telstra's decision to enable high-speed broadband services was met with rounds of applause in Canberra, but the telco's competitors have cried foul, urging the competition regulator to even the playing field. As news of Telstra's launch made headlines, the CEO of Primus quickly penned a letter to the ACCC. His concerns were the false perception Telstra was giving. And I must admit, I agree, me personally. So I don't think, as I say, I don't think it's all roses out there in the world of broadband delivery. Just
clearly something's still to come.
Something's funny out there. Also, 2008, the year of the content filter, apart from being the year of the rat. Maybe that's a, maybe they should be together. With Communications Minister Conroy set to release his report on ISP-level content filtering later this month, 2008 is shaping up to be the year of the content filter, according to an IP expert, Ms. Kimberly Weatherall, giving an update at a copyrighted Linux conference recently. So, now that's also going to be very interesting because, hey, if we want fast internet, we don't want content filtering, do we?
No, they kind of push in opposite directions.
They do, don't they? It's really bizarre. And
I'm not sure that content filtering at that level is the correct solution to that problem anyway.
Well, education, as we've discussed on this program over time.
Education and supervision is the better solution.
Pretty much, yeah. So I'm not quite sure why we're going down this path, whether it's a moral obligation by the new government, because they said they could, so they feel they better. But all I can say as an internet user is I'd like the option as an adult, as a father of a couple of young kids, that we still have the right to have a unfiltered supply so we can actually do things online, like download a video and interact without having all sorts of structure. Because, let's face it, there is context of certain emails and the likes. I don't know whether email will be filtered, but nonetheless, I don't know the big scheme of it, so we'll have to try and find out. All right, one other interesting bit of information before we take a break. Lydia Davis, our correspondent in California, who will get on the radio one of these days, Lyd.
That'd be nice to hear her voice on the air again.
Yes, it will. She sent across an interesting thing, stopbadware.org, the Netwood Watch campaign aimed at fighting badware. Now, this is nasty software and all that. Now, I reckon this will raise your hackles, Graham. A Stop Badware investigation found that RealPlayer 10.5 is considered to be badware because it fails to disclose the advertising features of the software, which are embedded by default for users who elect to exit the RealPlayer registration process.
Yes, I agree totally.
Yes. So, if you're installing... I hate RealPlayer with a passion. I've always thought it to be something that it isn't. And this just confirms that thought.
Yes, it does its basic job, but they've added on these extra bits of what some people call foistware, these things that get added on in order for you to get the basic thing. You get the other things added to it, like this advertising thing, this little annoying thing that pops up at the bottom and keeps telling you something or other.
Yes, but if you choose not to register, which is what I would do...
Yep.
Because I just wanted to hear something that I can't get in another format.
That's right.
If I choose not to register, then they're going to put this spyware, well, whatever it is. Foistware, as you call it.
Yeah.
RealPlayer 11 is considered to be badware because it does not disclose that it will install a Rhapsody Player Engine, whatever that is, because the relationship between Rhapsody Player Engine and RealPlayer or Real Networks is not disclosed, and because the Rhapsody Player Engine software is removed or identified when RealPlayer is uninstalled. So there you go.
Yes. Now, if I can just add a little bit of fuel to this fire...
Off you go, get the caro out.
I reckon that Adobe, with their what used to be called Acrobat Reader, and their Flash Player and their Shockwave Player, are walking a very fine line of ending up on lists like that themselves, with trying to foist toolbars... In particular.
Oh, you mean the Google toolbar and stuff like that comes up?
And other things like that on people who are wanting to download and install, say, Flash Player or Acrobat Reader.
Mm.
I think that it's bundled in with the installer, and you've got to untick the box. You've got to notice that the box is there and untick it and be confident enough that it's not something that you're going to need. Otherwise, you get this extra toolbar that you don't need and you didn't want. So I reckon that...
And it clutters your computer up and it slows it down and it sends things you don't want to send. It
takes up your display space. There's less space for the web page if you've got half a dozen toolbars. Google toolbar, Yahoo toolbar, MSN toolbar. I've seen customers who've got these all three toolbars on their thing, and they say, no, I didn't install any of them, they just appeared there.
But they have lots of choice.
Yes.
They're like and people at our place. They click first and ask questions later. Where'd that come from?
So I think that a lot of... And it's not just Adobe that do it. I've just singled them out. But, yes, they want to tread carefully to avoid being listed on these sorts of sites for that reason.
Can't agree with you more there, Dr. Graham. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan, Andrew McComb here this evening. Dr. Ron, somewhere out in cyberspace. We will be hearing from him in spirit sometime shortly down the end of the show. He might even call in. You never know, you like. But nonetheless, we'll take a break. When we come back, Adam Turner's going to tell us all about the land of digital television, which is his digital lounge room, really. Facebook spam. This is Dr. Ron. Now, what's going on here?
They said that, yeah.
But no one's recorded where that user is.
Well, we don't know that, Brian.
Yeah, well, no.
No?
No.
Oh. You're an anomaly. You're a statistical blip.
Yeah, but they're all city-centric deals, too.
What the worry is, though, it's not always as obvious as that.
Watch this space, wait till
you... The sinister bit is that they've been collecting all this data.
What the hell are they talking about?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
listening to Tech Talk Radio.
That you are. Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio, everybody. Andrew McCollum, Dr. Ron, is not here this evening. He's out there somewhere. Graham is here, though, and so is Justin Dunlop. And we're going to talk now about one of my pet hates, digital television.
You don't like digital television?
I love it.
No, I do. Don't get me wrong. I love the transmission technologies of digital television. I just don't like what the networks do to it.
I like the nice, clean, sharp picture.
You're obviously not watching ABC 2.
Well, and I like the fact that on the main ABC channel, you don't get those two rows of little dots across it.
What?
From where the power line
the
interference
noise
gets on the picture.
Yeah, the ABC, in the major cities, is at a very low frequency.
Yeah, it is.
If you've got noisy or big power lines at the front of your house, chances are you get to see funny little white lines go across the screen.
Which I find very annoying, so you don't get that on the digital TV.
No, you don't.
But when somebody opens the fridge or next door's air conditioner turns on or whatever it is, and where on the analog TV it would just go click and you wouldn't miss anything, the digital TV kind of drops sync for a second or so and you miss a word.
Jeez, I'm glad I don't live in your neighbourhood. Look, my gripe is primarily about the fact that the bandwidth, which is the pipe that comes from the TV station to our house, is it's a finite quantity. It's about 40 mega bandwidth in a lot of respects. So now, you can only get so much in there. Now, the thing that really amazes me is why the TV stations are trying to go multi-channeling, because each and every time you whack another channel in, you take, you know, a bit more bandwidth, a bit more of that space is used up in the pipe coming to your house. And then they want to go and stick a high-definition channel, which is like the equivalent of four standard def channels coming down. So you've got to look at what their motivations are. Like, I would have thought, why don't you just have a high def and maybe one, all right, maybe two, but not four. Not four standard. This is going to stand like Foxtel very shortly on a free-to-air sort of channel. But anyway, come next year, watch out. If you haven't got a set-top box or a device which has a digital tuner in it, you will be missing out. In fact, let me let Adam tell you all about probably the best bet with his view from the couch for this week.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
The digital lounge room is my office, both figuratively and literally, and it's going to be a busy place in 2008. The government has set an execution date for analog television broadcast, which is at the end of 2009 in the big cities. After that, if you don't have a television with a built-in digital tuner or a digital set-top box, all you'll see on television is an outside broadcast from Mount Buller during a snowstorm. Only a third of Australia's lounge rooms have made the move to digital, so more needs to be done to get the others to upgrade before the deadline. The free-to-air networks have botched the introduction of new programming on their high-definition digital channels, but as of January 2009, they'll be allowed to offer extra standard definition channels, which you'll only be able to see if you've gone digital. Under changes being considered by new Communications Minister Stephen Conroy, the government may allow TV networks to broadcast sporting events on these extra digital-only channels. The current anti-siphoning laws ensure free-to-air networks get first pick of the big sporting events, such as the AFL Grand Final or the Melbourne Cup, for their analog channels. This is to ensure that Australians aren't forced to subscribe to pay TV to watch the big sporting moments. I guess you could consider it the couch potato's bill of rights, but digital is set to shake this up. I say putting sport on digital-only channels in the metro area is a good idea, considering that in less than 2 years, metro viewers will be forced to go digital anyway. As with most technological transitions, most people will wait until the last minute and then demand the deadline for killing analog be moved because they're not ready. Even though you can pick up a dirt cheap digital set-top box from the supermarket, most Australians haven't bothered because analog still meets their needs. Football, cricket, tennis. Start moving these to digital-only channels now and people will sit up and take notice. Grab viewers by the balls and their hearts and minds will follow. The other big deal in the digital lounge room this year will be the battle of the high-definition personal video recorders. The Seven Network is set to unleash TiVo in Australia in time for the Beijing Olympics in August. Foxtel is also releasing its high-definition PVR, the IQ2, mid-year, along with the launch of four high-def channels. Both devices let you record multiple high-definition channels at the same time, putting your old VCR to shame. Again, it will be sport that helps push these technologies into Australia's lounge room. 10 is screening the AFL in high-definition, as is 7 with the Olympics, Nine screened its first high-def cricket game over the summer, the Melbourne 2020 game against India, and it looked fantastic on my big 46-inch television. Foxtel is also offering two high-def sports channels, with local HD content including AFL, NRL, Super 14s and A-League. It's going to be a year when too much high-def sport is barely enough. The view from the couch will be sharper than ever.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Yeah, the view from the couch may be a little bit more sharp, but I don't know whether sport's everyone's cup of tea. So I agree with Adam wholeheartedly in getting sport onto free-to-air digital channels outside of that. But
yep.
There's a lot of other scope that the digital channels do offer. They don't necessarily have to conform to our traditional viewing habits either, I don't think.
Well, that's part of the advantage of it, I suppose, is that they can offer maybe some of the more, you know, less popular but quality shows or something like that, and maybe find a niche market or two that currently doesn't get a run on the four or five channels.
I think it's also going to be interesting in respect to what we're going to see on those channels from a content point of view, because you look at, do they want to become another channel all of their own, sort of not unlike what ABC2 is. ABC2 is on air at the moment, which is the ABC's digital only second channel.
Yeah.
And the content there is fantastic, but normally it's a delayed repeat of something like Late Line or one of their current affairs programs.
Yeah, but that's one of the good things about ABC2 is that you get to see the Late Line and you get to see the...
I love it. I think it's terrific, and that's my point, because it's a delayed rebroadcast of something. Because a number of times you hear someone say, oh, did you see this on the 7:30 report or something like that? Then you can go back and watch it the next day. By the way, did you know the 7:30 report's on at 7:30 in the morning on ABC2?
I didn't know that.
That's very cool.
That's very clever.
Really cool.
See, yeah, but it's not just that. I mean, it's, you know, Spicks and Specs and all those other shows that, you know, maybe you might miss it when it's on, and it's rerun a couple of days later on ABC2. It's really handy.
So that's how they tend to use their channel. And also, it's great for the kids' stuff, as I think Johnny was alluding to earlier.
24-hour kids' TV. Fantastic.
It's not 24 hours,
not quite.
But it's during the nighttime, sort of when all the adult stuff's on the on ABC1, as they now call it. On ABC2, it's a little bit more kiddish. Because they can sit down and watch that sort of stuff. So I think they've thought about it, and it works.
So again, that's targeting the niche market.
Absolutely. But you look at it on the commercial point of view, what are they going to do? Are we going to have different channels with, like, their own standalone channels? Tonight on Channel 7.2 or something, 73 or something. Are they going to be, like, standalone channels, or are they going to use it to complement what they've got on their Channel 1 or their first channel, their primary channel? Because, like, they can split what they broadcast on high def compared to what they have on their standard def channel.
Yep.
But say, for example, the cricket or a sporting event, could be anything. It runs over time, as sporting events do, and runs into the news. So on whatever Channel 1, you can cut to the allocated program time. But for all of us diehard petrol heads or tennis heads or cricket heads, you just go to Channel 72 or 92 or whatever it is like that and watch it there. So I guess they've got to work out how they're going to use it.
Yeah.
They could do the director's cut and the commentaries on the second channel.
Well, I'll tell you what, the tennis this year was so boring. I reckon they should have had, Channel 7 should have had Roy and HG on channel
on another channel.
Now, wouldn't that have been fantastic?
Well, that sort of stuff can work, of course, on
digital.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, you get bored with the tennis players who know, the tennis commentators who are just like, you know, robots. Why not have the Roy and HG thing on... I don't know, but that's just the example.
Yeah, or they could put on a complete contrast on one of the other channels. They could have,
well, not a movie.
They could have a movie on the alternative channel for someone who's not into the sport, or they could have maybe the regular programs that have been usurped by the sporting event taken over that regular program's night. They could put on a special on the alternative channel.
Right, to get rid of those complaints about you've taken, you know, my favourite show off the TV just so I could watch the cricket.
Exactly right, yeah.
What about Star Trek? Do you think there's a home for Star Trek?
Oh, I think it's four, but I wasn't going to say
on a regular hourly basis.
But that might be one of those niche markets, like they might find that, you know, on...
Sci-fi channel.
Well, but maybe a sci-fi segment while some sporting event's on. You know, they might put sci-fi programming on one of the other channels. You know, because they're catering to completely different markets.
Just as long as the vision doesn't move, like it's not a quick pan or something like that, because then it'll just pixelate and fall apart.
Yeah, well, that's a bit of a problem. Yeah, so, I mean, even, as you've suggested on ABC2, it can look a little bit like a dodgy download off the internet with, you know, blocks in the background.
Well, we'd know about that. It's also interesting too that, yes, if you look at a picture such as take the cricket or the tennis, where you've got lots of little heads in the background in the audience,
yep,
that takes up a lot of bandwidth for the, you know, broadcaster to actually get all that information out there. So as it pans across, you know, you do a left pan or the footy goes up the ground or something like that, it requires a lot of bandwidth so that that
that's
image
right,
doesn't
update all that fine detail. Yeah, that's right.
So if you go home now, it's a bit like looking for the cinch other little circles in the old movies where you used to, until you were pointed out to them, you never used to know them.
Yeah, the easiest
you're
place
you're going to see it now. Yeah. You go, oh, look at that, it falls apart. And it does.
Yeah. One of the other places you see it is in an entertainment show, a movie or something, where they've got a dark background and you can see the shades of black in the background. You can see with definite edges, and then there's another different shade of black and an edge and another shade of black in what should be a continuous black background.
Bit of a halo. Yeah,
yeah, very very distracting to watch once you notice it.
I was watching a show on the ABC the other night, on ABC 2, which was really
good. Oh, yes, and you get that effect in the cloud of steam.
And they went for a bit of a walk through a bushy parkland, a lot of sticks and leaves and stuff. Beautiful pictures, but we couldn't see it.
Fair enough.
So, yes, digital TV is fraught with all sorts of interesting dilemmas for the new frontier.
Balancing acts all over the place that the networks are going to have to deal with.
All right, let's go from the sublime to the ridiculous. Let's talk about YouTube being a broadcaster as well. Because
speaking of pixelated pictures,
low-quality
compressed images, yeah?
Well, actually, there's probably more viewers on YouTube than there are on some free-to-air channels.
Oh, that wouldn't be. That wouldn't surprise me in the least.
To be quite honest. YouTube is now going to get into bed with the people who actually upload content to YouTube, because there's a lot of little clips up there which, you know, attract thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of hits in a very short period of time.
Yes.
Now, the way Google make their money, now, Google own YouTube.
Are these the clips where somebody's cat does a particularly stupid thing, or are these the clips that are commercial clips like music videos and things like that?
Bit of both.
Okay.
A bit of both. But if someone wants to make a movie of cats doing silly things, or there's one there I saw the other day because it was an example of someone doing things with popcorn of all strange things. What happens now is if people watch it, or you can get a lot of people to watch it, you now get to cover the income.
Oh, from the advertising revenue.
Yeah, so it's a bit of an incentive there, and like, you know, Google, you know, obviously got plenty of cash.
Okay, so if you come up with the next big thing of, you know, someone jumping off the roof on a skateboard, or cat, you know, disappearing behind the couch or whatever it might happen to be. I'm trying to think of things that people watch on YouTube, but yeah.
I guess it doesn't matter what it is, as long as
you can make a bit of cash.
Yeah, but you have to be in the top percentage. Like, it's not for everyone.
You'd have to get hits in the millions.
Yeah, yeah. So you've got to build something which is, or make something which is really good, so who knows what might happen. Anyway, here's a little bit about what YouTube's up to.
YouTube boasts that it gives anyone the chance to broadcast themselves. A whopping 123 million people click onto the site every month. With such an audience, it is, for advertisers, extremely attractive. And now the contributors themselves will be rewarded for the part that they play. The more traffic they generate for the site, the more they could potentially earn.
One, you must have original content. Two, you must own the copyright. And three, you must try and build up your own traffic. Once you reach those three criteria, there's an opportunity to have advertising surrounding your content, at which point you will be remunerated as a profit share for that ad spend.
James Proven has been posting videos on YouTube for the past year. This one, set to music, shows him making pancakes. A simple but original idea, it's already achieved more than 2.5 million hits and made him a few £1,000.
Well, back last April, YouTube contacted me when they released the partnership scheme in America, and they decided to make some people from other countries as well partners before they launched the whole UK partnership.
The money he's made has allowed him to buy more and better equipment. This video, a newer and slicker version of the original.
It's been really good for me because it's allowed me to get some new hardware. Like, I've got a really good camera now, I've got a good computer, and I've got a good editing system. So it's made a big difference to the quality of my videos.
An advert will take up 20% of the screen and run for 10 seconds before disappearing. Users will earn money for every visitor who clicks on it. Managed correctly, it is a win-win situation, but it's not that easy. Content must be original, and Google, the owners of YouTube, will only provide the opportunity to those with creative video or loyal, established audiences.
An advert will take up 20% of the screen and run for 10 seconds before disappearing. Users will earn money for every visitor who clicks on it. So your dancing pet or funny friend could make you a tidy net profit. Alistair Bunkle, Sky News.
There you go. So there's a bit about what Google's up to, which, I don't know, it's maybe all good and maybe not all good, but nonetheless, you might get a cut now for your movies online.
Sounds like a good idea to me.
Yep. So everyone, get out there and make something. Now, before we take the break, Adam's been good on the email. He's got his priorities right. ABC has Red Dwarf on twice a week.
It does, yes.
There you go. I must admit, I like absolutely. Red Dwarf, especially... Yes. Cat and the guys. And
absolutely.
The Red Gingham episode was my favourite one, but nonetheless, that was a while back. And ABC 3 will be apparently just for kids. There you go, Justin.
Oh, excellent.
So, and I'll be looking forward to that. I know Adam is also in the same boat. Toddler Taming, the electronic babysitter, however you'd like to call it, is coming your way, I think, in 2009 on ABC television. So watch out for that. All right. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Graham Callaghan, Justin Dunlop, and Andrew McComb here tonight. When we come back, I'm going to take a bit of a look at some patches. Apparently, there's a lot of patching going on at the moment in both camps.
Well, this name, Tom.
Dr. Ron?
Your hand is not.
Residual power, and I've got some residual power.
You can't turn off CDMA.
Well,
in terms of the volume,
overstanding your fingerprints. Now, this
may have digressed.
Talk radio.
Phil Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600
donors and things that are good that you're not expecting, even if they do occur.
Well, listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
It's amazing how everyone just jumps when that music. we're all sitting here having another show in the studio, and then, whoosh, quick, put on the headphones. Yes, we've obviously touched a nerve there, Graham, with what we've been talking about with those lovely little things. An email just in from Susie Q. Spamfield is working really well again. Thanks, Susie. I got caught, this is Susie, got caught by the download toolbar with Adobe recently. Didn't notice the box that you're supposed to untick.
Yes.
Click download, and while it was downloading, noticed it said downloading a toolbar. And she remembered what we said on Tech Talk Radio last year. She cancelled the download and thought she'd just go and download it again. And when she tried it, sort of said, nah, you keep going with the previous version. So she couldn't get around it, apart from installing Adobe and uninstalling the toolbar. Why don't these downloads have a box U and in capital letters? Oh, I feel like the ABC, the screen's just gone blank on me. why don't you tick if you want in capital letters rather than a box you have to.
Well, I'll tell you why, because Adobe get cash, you know, real money, you know, a few cents every time somebody downloads and installs a Google toolbar from them.
Oh, is that how it works? Yeah, that's absolutely. The incentive, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
See, the only reason they would do something so annoying is because they're making money out of it.
Yeah, well, we frequent at our place, like most parents would if they've got kids that like games on the computers, Game House, where you get a lot of these trial game things and the kids just go berserk on them. And, the toolbars are rampant in those downloads for that very reason.
Yep, so that's what's paying for the game development.
Is it?
Oh, presumably.
All right, speaking of game development, Microsoft. No, it's no relation. That's a really bad segue. Microsoft Microsoft are offering a standalone version of Outlook for people that want to use said program, which is interesting because you used to get bundled on your Windows box Outlook Express, the cut-down version.
That's right. But Outlook Express has no spam filtering. It has no spell checking. It has no calendar facility. It has a fairly basic address book instead of a contact list.
Cut down is a really not really the right
nothing
word.
Like it's really.
Sort of the amputated version.
Yeah.
Keep going. Is there anything else it hasn't got?
Oh, I'm sure there is. Like,
do you have multiple email accounts in it or something?
You can.
Oh, that's something. Anyway, Microsoft has launched a new version of Outlook targeted towards small businesses, which will be sold separately from Office. The email application will be combined with a contact management tool and branded Office Outlook 2007 with Business Contact Manager, strangely enough. Small business owners need effective solutions for managing their customer database, apparently. So this is the reason why Microsoft have come out and done this. Many small and home-based businesses keep their contacts in several different places. I know someone in my family who does. So this will some in Rolodexes and some in spreadsheets. Well, I think that's well, maybe they do. I thought the Rolodex went out of quite a while back, but obviously they're the roundabout things. You pull fingers and it rolls over and all that sort of stuff. So there you go. $149 US if you just want to buy it, but maybe worth going and spending a bit more and getting the actual
Office.
Yeah,
I would have thought that most businesses are going to buy Office, and of course Outlook comes with every version of Office.
It does. And Small Business Server too.
Small Business Server forces that
because that's how it talks to Exchange Server.
Which is part of Small Business Server, that's right. So it's interesting that they're providing this as a standalone product. I wonder if they're feeling the pinch from OpenOffice or something like that. People are
using there's a lot of mail clients
using OpenOffice Writer instead of Word, and they're hoping that people will buy just Outlook because it's the email client that sort of has the
well. To be quite honest, I would like to use a third party packaging sort of third party email system. But I just haven't had the motivation to move across because of the contacts. Really, is the only reason, and because it does talk to Exchange and does all the contacts.
Well, in your case, you're talking to Exchange Server, aren't you?
I am.
Yeah, so Outlook is the right tool to do that. And it's going to something else is going to be a bit of a compromise. Whereas if you're just a home user, you haven't got Exchange Server. If you've got an email account that's provided by your internet service provider rather than on your own mail server, then one of the alternatives like Thunderbird really competes very well. It's free. Competes very well with Outlook Express that comes with Windows because it adds things back that Outlook Express hasn't got, like spell checking and spam filtering.
Is this where I sound really old? That I still use Eudora?
There's nothing wrong with Eudora.
Eudora's dead.
Oh, well.
The Eudora project is over, and, the website recommends that people move to Thunderbird.
But it was a great program in its time.
It really was.
I used to use it.
Eudora was the email client before Thunderbird came along.
You still using Netscape, by the way, JD?
I've had to go there. I still do on my old Macs, but... Yeah.
There's a name from the past, Netscape. What are they doing these days?
They've round up.
Have they?
Well, the client has.
Oh, well, yes, but I think they're still out there doing something somehow, somewhere in another life. But anyway. All right, here's something else near and dear to your heart, potentially, Justin. Apple's patches QuickTime and iPhoto flaws. Apple has issued updates for QuickTime and iPhoto affecting OS X, Windows Vista, and XP users. Well, there you go, that's everybody.
Everybody.
So they don't mention Ubuntu users, so Dr. Ron
is safe, yes.
He's safe, and you're probably pretty safe too there, Graham.
So. Oh, no, I'm using XP in a couple of places, yeah.
Are you? Okay, the QuickTime vulnerability leaves users open to attack via a web page embedded with specially crafted streaming media files. Specially crafted. So that means someone's out to do some things, I guess.
Very crafty.
Yeah, so what you've got to do is the attacker's got to convince you to look at a video file or a sound file that's QuickTime encoded.
Yes.
And has this thing in it.
And has this thing, that they've specifically put this code into.
Which probably wouldn't be many people, but there's obviously the ones out there.
Oh, it's easy enough to convince people to click on a QuickTime file. You send them an email, say, hey, look at this really cool video, or put it on your website, put it on everybody else's blog, link it in the comments on people's blogs and things like that.
Or have it as a pop-up window.
Yeah.
So you're saying blogs are unsafe now? Probably the unscrupulous ones, I guess.
I'm saying you can, anyone, where you've got one of those blogs where anyone can add a comment, you could put the link, could put the link to the dodgy file in the comment and say, hey, have a look at this cool video.
Yeah, that would be deceiving, especially if it was a fairly closed group and everyone was interested in what was going on.
And that's how people take advantage of these sorts of things. So, and it's so easy to just click on that. So updating QuickTime to not be vulnerable to this is your best bet to being safer.
All right, an attacker could cause QuickTime to crash and remotely execute code on the target system. The flaw was reported on the 11th of January by a security company, and this isn't the first time that Apple has had to patch a vulnerability in QuickTime's RTSP code, which means Remote Transfer Streaming Protocol.
Which is just a technical way of saying how it sends the data over the internet.
Yep. So, and Apple has also issued an update for iPhoto. Do you use iPhoto?
I do.
Any good?
All the time.
Yes. What's
it do?
iPhoto, it allows you to sort your photos. So in my case, I've got a digital camera. I plug it into my iMac. iPhoto loads up, says, do you want to download these? I say, yes.
Okay, manages all your pictures for you.
Yeah, manages the pictures. Well, warning, some basic editing.
Yeah. Warning, warning, Dr. Smith, because you better do the update. The image organising and sharing application, which is a standard component for the iLife suite of OS X. The flaw could allow an attacker to create a malformed malformed photocast stream. Do you use photocast?
No, I don't do that.
This is so you can send slideshows to other users, it sounds like. So you can make a slideshow and send it off to somebody, is it?
Yeah, anyway, I haven't done that myself.
It malforms it. Yeah, well, malforms it, and it allows people to sort of send that stream and execute a code on somebody else's machine. So
naughty.
Beware, the Apple patches are out too. And Microsoft have got a bigger than Ben-Hur patch coming up for February, apparently. Do you know anything about this, Graham?
Not sure which one you're talking
about. Well, they all went on holidays in January, Microsoft.
Yeah.
So patch
Tuesday is going to be very big. not unusual for Microsoft to leave a flaw unpatched for a while, while they thoroughly test the update, of course.
Well, at least they do. Others don't.
Well.
All right, so yes, Patch Tuesday, which is traditionally when Microsoft download all and sundry and really get your broadband usage up and going if you're...
Yes.
Be
but
wary.
If you've got automatic updates on and it'll spend all night downloading your patches.
How big's the Vista patch? Service Pack 1? I haven't seen it yet. Is it...
Well, I haven't got it yet. No, it'll be quite big, I would imagine.
Have you ever seen it yet?
No, I haven't got mine yet.
Oh. Is it available for download online? I haven't looked.
No, not unless you're a beta tester, I think. I think it's in release to manufacturers only at this stage, I think.
Oh, okay. All right, well, we'll just watch out and see what happens.
Absolutely.
So if you go and buy a new machine, you might get it. Oh, beware. Okay, and finally, Xbox 360, the high-definition DVD drive, which lives in it and all that sort of stuff, 48% price drop. Now, is this the death knell for HD DVD?
Well, I'd say it's got to be related to the news we had last week of Toshiba dropping the prices of HD DVD players, which was in response to yet another movie studio saying they were going to go and support Blu-ray as the high-def format rather than HD DVD.
So to coin a election phrase, is it too close to call, the death of HD DVD, or are we here at Tech Talk Radio firmly going to sit on the fence and say thumbs down to HD DVD and say move on? Maybe HD DVD will have a life in data backups or something like that, in PCs or something. But
well, that's one possibility. But yeah, it does look like Blu-ray is definitely pulling out ahead, and as we mentioned last week, for the reasons that it just seems to have all the support at this stage.
They're still pretty pricey, the Blu-ray drives, if you've seen them in the supermarket. Speaking of supermarkets...
Haven't seen one in the supermarket.
You can buy set-top boxes. I also saw printers and scanners and office...
Yeah, I've seen set-top boxes in the supermarket for $50 or so.
Yeah, exactly. I'll get my SIM card from my mobile phone, or I'll buy a mobile phone, and it's just like the supermarkets are becoming a Dick Smith. Well, Dick Smith has sort of gone all white goods-ish now anyway, but that's another story.
I tried to buy components there the other day. They don't have them anymore.
What's I know, you can't get a resistor at Dick Smith anymore. My goodness, Dick would be turning in his grave, wouldn't
he?
Anyway, all right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We better take a break. We'll be back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage? What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus have again had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Betty's got one.
Yeah.
I wonder what she listens to. She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters swamped in the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking for the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
And you put the date on E-Pray, and you get a whole service.
How does it go?
It goes...
Insightful, entertaining, and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Not long to go now. Tech Talk Radio on the airwaves on a radio station near you. Hello to everyone listening on a free-to-air service, and hello to everyone listening to us on the pod, wherever you might happen to be. Whether you're in Chicago, hello to everyone over at Stop and Go Radio. That's on the other side of the planet, and not to mention all of our expats that seem to listen to us from near and far. You can send us an email, jump on the forum, make sure you subscribe to our newsletter, because that's a good thing that we're doing these days. Nice to keep you up to date, click some links, a bit of news early in the piece, all sorts of things there. So visit the website, techtalkradio.com.au, and follow your nose, like a lot of people have been doing lately, so which is good. Hello to our new subscribers. There have been a few new subscribers in this week too, which is very good. I won't name them on air because they may not want me to, but I'll be picking a few listeners up from ABC Radio, which is very handy. So
very good.
Welcome aboard all of our ABC listeners at the moment. So... yes, all right, let's... in the break, we were talking about something which I said to JD. I said, we should talk about that on air. Apple and their iPhone. You're saying you can now actually... What's the deal with an iPhone in Australia, JD?
Well, if you want to import one, they're fairly expensive still. I'm still waiting for the next G version that'll come out, we're told, about March, so not long to...
March?
Right now.
Do you know who the carrier's going to be?
No idea. In fact, I'm not even sure that March is real anymore, but because it's only next month. However, the issue with the iPhone, for those of you who haven't been keeping up, is that you need to unlock it in order to use it outside of the US and on the non
yes, there's a bit of
carrier.
Bit of soldering iron work involved in
well,
things
soldering
like
iron. There was another option, which was to use one of these SIM encoders, so it makes the iPhone think it's talking to the US network, but in fact it's actually talking to Optus or Telstra or whoever.
Mm-hmm.
But with the latest version of the firmware, 1.1.3, that stopped working. But GeoHot, or at least that's his screen name, has come up with an unlock process for that now. So virtually every model iPhone now and version of firmware can be used without the SIM converter. So with the natural SIM the way it's meant to be for your carrier on your local network. So you can do MMS, SMS, phones. It won't do the visual voicemail thing, which was Apple's big selling feature, because that's a network-specific option which isn't available in Australia.
Here's a question. It may not be directed to the right person because it's a telephony-related question. The 3G SIMs are different to the 2.5G SIMs in respect to their USIM or something like that, and you can't normally swap them over. Can you put a 3G SIM into into an iPhone? Does it work?
I would imagine it would. I mean, I've got a 3G SIM in my 2.5G phone now. So.
Okay, good. So it does work. Because I think they're different voltages too. Where's Mark when you need him?
I think it depends on the model of phone.
Does it?
Mm.
Okay. Well, there you go. Might think about getting an iPhone 1 year. When they roll out 4G or something like that. No, but they're a very nice thing. The pinch and flick and all that sort of stuff. Which also is now available
on the
new
MacBook Air.
Yeah, I saw that the other day. I thought, oh, that's got to be good. And, you know, just the ability to... if you know, when you shoot your digital camera and it's... portrait as opposed to landscape, or is it the other way around? Landscape.
Yeah.
Long ways is what I'm trying to say. And you can just grab, you just get your fingers, says, "Hey, you're doing this in the studio," and just turn it on the
But on my digital camera, it's got a sensor in it, so when you rotate the camera, it rotates the image on the screen for you.
Ooh, mine doesn't
Ooh,
do that.
Ooh, freaky. That's good.
All right, let's have a little bit of humour now. We have some listeners, where I was alluding to when we came in tonight, from wherever you might happen to be listening in the world. We've had our first form of flattery sent across. They've asked us not to announce their names. Let's call them Steve. That's all. Hi guys, as you have entertained us for 2 years, we thought we'd return the favour. They've actually made us a bit of a send up of Tech Talk Radio, which I heard, and Dr. Ron said, "You've got to play this, it's very funny, it's very funny." So sit back, relax, enjoy, and by all means, send these in, because we get a laugh out of them, even if we don't put them to air. But this was terrific. So thank you very much for your effort from ANS over there in Bristol in the UK.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
G'day, welcome to Tech Talk Radio, where you'll find everything technical, from gadgets to broadband. Yeah, everything about Australian broadband.
Australian broadband? Screw, is that a bit of big bank size?
No, you stupid bozo. It's to do with internet, isn't it? Anyway, we're pleased to say that Dr. Bruce is here tonight. What have you been up to today, Dr. Bruce?
G'day. I've just reinstalled my server.
Oh, straight. That must have been plaything.
Yeah, it was. I had 15 discs.
Oh, 15 discs. That sounds like one heavy load. Anyway, welcome to Tech Talk Radio. Let's have a look at the rundown on the show tonight.
This is Tech Talk News.
There's no news. What are we going to do?
Air record?
No, we can't do that. The license has expired. And what's more, the gramophone ain't working. What's that wind-up thing in the corner? Surely you CDs these days. Well, we did until Dr. Bruce there went and sat on the CD player. Anyway, we can't play no music. So, I'll tell you what, let's have a game of Tiddlywinks. We haven't had a good challenge for ages, have we, Dr. Bruce?
No, we haven't.
Are you up for Tiddlywinks?
Yeah, that sounds alright.
Okay, right then, let's go for it.
Yeah. I don't know, are they taking the mickey?
I think they got Dr. Bruce down pat.
Dr. Bruce. Hey, thanks for that. That was very humorous and...
unbelievable.
You obviously have too much spare time on your hands. But anyway, the boys, that was humorous. Anyway, feedback at techtalkradio.com.au if you want to partake in things like that. Ah, dear, leaves me a bit speechless, really, doesn't it? But nonetheless, we'll continue on. Dr. Bruce, Dr. Graham, and Dr. Andrew, and Dr. Justin in the studio this evening. So, is he looking at the rundown just now? Okay, let's talk about NextG advocates. Telstra staff have already visited the homes of hundreds of CDMA customers. It wants to help migrate to its NextG network. They're doing a door knock. How about that?
Good on them.
That's not bad for a phone company, is it?
It's right. Actually coming out to see the customer.
Oh, yes, yeah, service.
Knock, knock on the door.
Can I tell you, though, that I actually tried to ring the phone company tonight at 6:50 or something?
Yeah.
And they're all gone. This is Telstra. Sorry, the office is running.
No one to answer the phone at Telstra.
8 and 6. We're not in at the moment. Can you leave a message and we'll call you back in the morning? We'll send someone around to knock on your door. So, oh, dear. Laugh. We did. All right, mobile phone usage. To overtake landline usage, what I was talking about earlier, Graham.
Yeah.
Mobile voice calls will exceed those on fixed networks in Western Europe by the middle of 2008, apparently. The latest telecoms...
I'm surprised it doesn't already, to be honest.
Really? Yeah. Well, apparently all the research is showing that the proportion of call minutes made from mobiles has increased by 1.4% each year. Each quarter over the past year, so we're getting more and more volume. This is obviously in Europe. In the UK, where patterns of consumers are close to the European average, mobile voice usage should overtake fixed voice in the second quarter of 2008, and which has already happened in France, apparently. But you take a look at Australia, and I would have to say that let's ditch the fixed line. I think everybody wants to, but they can't because of DSL.
Do you make calls on your mobile phone when you're home?
Yes. I don't use the home phone. The only reason why I have a home phone is because of the internet. I need a DSL, but as soon as Naked comes along,
so see ya. So if you've got your mobile phone in your pocket and the home phone's right beside you, you'd still use a mobile.
Absolutely.
All your phone numbers are in it. It's too easy.
Yeah, and do you find that too, that it's absolutely rude when someone rings you on a home phone these days?
Because you tend to think, what on earth is going on? Yeah.
Who's ringing me on that number? Oh, that'll be for my wife, and you leave it go. Or whatever. The telemarket or something.
Yeah, telemarketers ring on the home phone.
And don't answer, yeah.
Well, actually, it's been really good. I haven't had any telemarketers since the Egyptian debacle last week.
Oh,
did you hear about that?
No.
There's a couple of cables that run between Alexandria, the Egyptian old port over there, and the mainland, and apparently, or allegedly, some anchors got dragged through these cables, taking out most of India.
So three cables in the space of a couple of weeks in two separate incidents, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So it was really quite a serious thing.
And once the second incident happened, everyone goes, oh, no, this is not accidental.
Terrorism.
So as a result, the Indians have had all sorts of problems trying to read or follow the cricket because of internet bandwidth-related issues. And if you've tried calling the three customer service centre over there, it's congestion is pretty much the name of the game.
Mm.
Yes, it's interesting.
No small operation to fix those undersea cables either. Massive big repair ship out to them and dredge them up. And
Well, do they do that these days?
Apparently,
or do they send divers down?
No, apparently they've got the specialised ship with winches and all kinds of things to bring the cable up and repair it and drop it back down again.
Oh, fantastic.
It's a massive operation.
Must have a bit of slack in it. You see the Optus cables in the street, they have that little...
It'll have a bit more slack in it now because the patch will add length.
I thought they would have sent a diver down to plug it in, or I guess, as you say, they'd pull it up.
Depends on the depth, I think. I think they might be beyond diving depth.
Yeah. Well, we're getting a new cable over here, heading off to Guam, Adam was saying last week, which is really good.
Yeah.
Improve our speeds here, which hopefully will also cause our prices to drop, because everything else is going up if you've been
well,
in the supermarket
yeah, because
lately.
The new cable's not under the control of the major telecom companies. It's under control of some of the more independent ISPs, so...
I've quite often wondered why bandwidth to the US has always been restricted compared to, say, Europe and the like. There must be different portals in our country for that.
There's cables going in different directions, yeah.
Because to the US, I can, regardless, on ADSL2, I can get a lot of concurrent downloads happening at the 220 kilobits per second, but I can't get one big one happening at blindingly fast speed.
That's curious, isn't it?
So,
yeah.
Unless I've been going to the wrong sites or downloads or stuff, but everything else seems to route to Europe for a faster download. Or, if you know, Kaspersky or something like that, always pick the Russian servers. Oh, blindingly fast out of Russia.
That's interesting.
I think they've got all the good stuff over there. Hello to Eugene, if you're listening too. He's been on the show. We get them all here. Mobiles don't cause cancer. This is back in the news again. Mobile phone...
No joke.
This was in Australian IT. Mobile phones, deodorants and coffee are extremely unlikely to cause cancer. Well, that's good. I'm happy about the coffee. According to a new risk report designed to combat urban myths about what causes the diseases.
On the other hand, it's been discovered that conducting laboratory experiments on mice causes them to catch cancer.
Really?
Yeah.
You're a wealth of information tonight, too. So there you go. Urban myths. There's a lot of them out there. It's been out there, you know, all these cancer-related things and mobile base station towers and stuff like that.
Any new technology is going to have a fear factor associated with it, and sometimes it's justified and sometimes it's not.
You've got more chance of having a battery go bang in your pocket. Like a PlayStation you were talking about, too.
Oh, yes, exploding PlayStation portables now. This is the latest in the saga of lithium-ion, presumably poorly manufactured batteries. Yeah, when you get a fold in one of those batteries, it really goes. It really gets hot.
Sony had a bad batch with all the laptops, the Dells
and
stuff like that.
Was making the batteries under contract for some other companies, and, there was a manufacturing defect in, and, the Dell laptops were catching fire and all that sort of stuff.
So is it a recall, or is this a one-off that you've
As far as I can gather, is a one-off, and it's not in... From what I've read, it's not entirely clear whether it was an original battery in it, or whether it might have been an aftermarket third-party battery that might have been in it, or if something else extraordinary had been done to it and been charged with the wrong charge or something like that.
But you never know, do you?
With a one-off like that. But, yeah, apparently caught fire in a school kid's pocket and did some damage.
Ouch. All right, back to telephones. Vodafone customers in rural New South Wales were left without mobile phone services for almost a week.
You're kidding?
No.
A week?
A week. Not next G, mate. So as a result, do you reckon they get any compo for not having your mobile? You pay for a monthly contract, you want at least a 25% discount, I would have thought.
You'd have to.
Vodafone said, stick it.
Really?
When asked whether Vodafone would be offering customers compensation, a spokesman, Mr. Greg Spears, said, Vodafone appraises all compensation claims for disruption to normal services on a case-by-case basis.
Okay, so no blanket compensation, but if you apply, you might get it.
Well, it's worth a try, isn't it? But anyway.
Yeah, I'd be having a go.
Yeah, why wouldn't you? There's no such thing as a service guarantee for mobiles, is there? It's only fixed lines. That's the Telstra thing and the Optus thing that the CIO...
I think it depends. Essential service type guarantee that...
Yeah.
They have to live up to on fixed lines, but not on mobiles.
All right, and just before we bow out for the day, a couple of other little interesting things. TPG, the internet service provider, is teaming up with Soul Communications. You know that funny ad where the girl...
Oh, got to have.
Yeah, that's the one. Consolidating in struggle of middle tier of Australia's $34 billion telecommunications sector. These guys are getting together. So
interesting.
Yeah, it'll be worth $250 million, apparently, if it all comes off. So... There you go. A little bit more information for things. And, of course, the big news, which has fallen off the radar last week, Microsoft and Yahoo. makes a bit of a tremble. But it's raised some interesting issues in this country.
Certainly has.
In respect to our broadcasters, because 9MSN, which is the Microsoft version, and 7 Yahoo.
Yeah, so 9
conflict
and 7.
Conflict of interest. What's the ACCC going to think about all this?
So
what do you reckon will happen, Graham?
I've no idea.
Maybe there'll be one ISP for all television networks or something like that, very shortly. One has to laugh. All right.
Yes.
So, all right, we'll watch the space on that one, but we'll take a break, and when we come back, it'll be Oddspot Gadgets and the website of the week on Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
You are listening.
Residual power.
And I've got some residual power.
You can't turn off CDMA.
Well, in terms of the volume,
over 60 fingerprints. Now, this
we may progress.
Talk radio.
Phil Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600
kilos and things that you're not expecting, even if they do a few profits.
Well, this time, to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Ladies and gentlemen, for this segment, I'd like to introduce you to the virtual Dr. Ron.
Hi all, Dr. Ron here with this week's gadget. While we were off merrymaking over the summer series, I was given a do-it-yourself toy kit as a Kris Kringle present. It's the Mini Solar Spider Robot Kit, and it's an eight-legged mechanical creature that crawls almost anywhere, as long as its solar cell is pointing at direct sunlight. It's got what can best be described as a crab-like walking motion, and it takes about half an hour to assemble. Inside its small body is an electric motor, which is connected directly to a solar panel. It looks like something that NASA might use to explore the surface of Mars. All you need is a small Phillips head screwdriver to put the thing together. Batteries aren't included because batteries are not needed. You can buy these online for about $15. That's the Mini Solar Spider Robot Kit, this week's gadget on Tech Talk Radio.
Have you got one of these, Graham?
I haven't got one, but I've seen Dr. Ron's one. It's the most extraordinary looking machine. He's quite right when he says it looks like something that might explore Mars.
So what does it do?
It's just got a solar cell on it and a little motor, and the motor runs this incredibly intricate little series of gears that makes the legs move and it walks. Oh, and that's what cool. It does. That's all it does.
That's going to kill my son's volcano experiment, I think.
Oh, goodness me. All right, that was the Tech Talk Radio Gadget of the Week. Thank you there to the virtual Dr. Ron.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
All right, this one, GIMP.org, and I'll get JD to tell us a bit about this, but apparently if you go to GIMP, says he, alt tabbing, if you head off to w's.gimp.org, you'll find a lovely little program there, which is free to download. It's a powerful, full-featured photo editing program comparable to Photoshop, and it's available for Linux, Mac, and Windows. Now, you've been using it, have you, JD? I have. It uses the X11 windowing system if you're running Linux or Mac OS X. And operates under Windows. It's a freeware alternative to Photoshop.
In fact, it's completely open source, so it's GPL license. You can use it for anything, even commercially.
What's GPL mean?
It's a license. It's a way of licensing software so that you ensure that the source code is always available if someone wants to modify it. And it also means that that even if someone does modify it, that they provide the modifications back to the community. And it means it's totally free to use. You can use it. You can distribute it for free. Okay. You can give it away. You can sell it. You can use it in a commercial environment. You can do anything with it.
So really GIMP's good, is it?
Pretty powerful. It's got layering in it. I used it to do some maps last year quite extensively. So it's got layering. It does all the graphic effects you'd expect.
It's very, very powerful. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to download it. There you go. That's the Tech Talk Radio, and that came from Lydia Davis too in Palo Alto. Thanks, Lyd, for that one. GIMP.org.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Shoot. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Oddspot on Tech Talk Radio.
Well, as if we didn't have enough to worry about already, the US is warning that the cyber world and Second Life and such virtual worlds are becoming a dangerous area where terrorists might be operating.
The war on terror has gone to cyberspace now.
What started off as a benign environment where people would congregate to share information or explore fantasy worlds is now offering the opportunity for religious or political extremists to recruit, rehearse, transfer money, and ultimately engage in information warfare, or worse, with impunity. And the Intelligence Advanced Research Projects Activity, would you believe, IARPA, part of the US intelligence community, recommends setting up red teams of intelligence operatives who would investigate virtual worlds. So watch out for the red cyber spooks next time you log on to Second Life.
Next there'll be a television
program.
They'll be
keeping an eye on what you're doing and making sure you don't plan to blow up the ABC's island again.
Well, yes, that's right. Telstra's out there too. Watch out, Telstra. You'll get some operatives coming in there to stealthily destroy your virtual 3G network or something.
Good idea, yep. So, yes, the US intelligence services, yep, paranoia reigns supreme.
All right, you have been listening to, not Dr. Ron, but Dr. Graham. Thank you very much, Graham, this evening. Justin Dunlop has been in, and I'm Andrew McComb. Until next week, when on the show we have... Senior Constable Susan McLean from Victoria Police returning to those Tech Talk Studios live.
Fantastic.
To talk about...
She was really good last time she was on.
Yeah, cyberbullying, and hopefully we'll have a bit more of a surprise too, but can't say just yet, so you better make sure you tune in for next week. And that should be a really good program to listen to. So if you've got young kids online who surf at school, they get picked on via SMSs and stuff like that, you'll get some very handy hits.
Yeah.
And it'll be all modern, because we haven't had her on for about 12 months or so. So it'll be fantastic. Looking forward to that one. And we might even get to see the virtual Dr. Ron at some stage next week. Which, who knows?
A nice change.
The real
Dr. Ron.
The real Dr. Ron, yeah. All right, so that's it. Tech Talk Radio for this week. Same station, same podcast, this time next week too. Make sure you're with us. Until then, it's bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron Hanlis, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA, and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.